The Freeman Report on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello and welcome to the second hour of today's Freeman Report. It is Friday, the 10th of May, 2024. I'm James Freeman, and if you just joined me, you missed the first hour of the show. I welcomed two people who've been injured by the AstraZeneca jab to share their feelings about revelations that I discussed with Eden Bieber on yesterday's show. That the British government, the MHRA and AstraZeneca are colluding to conceal long-term trial data from the public that is damning on the safety of its COVID jab. I also spoke with geoeconomic analyst and former hedge fund manager Alex Craner about decoding the West's relationship with Russia. If you have just joined us and you missed the first hour of the show, it will be uploaded to the website and the app in the next few hours. Just head over to tntradio.live and click on the episodes button. And if you want to get the app, it is in the Google and Apple app stores. Just search for TNT Radio, and then you'll be able to listen back and watch all of my previous shows. Right, okay. I've got a great next hour coming up for you here on the Freeman Report. There is a bit of a change of schedule. It is a live show, and these things do happen. I was due to be speaking with Pfizer whistleblower Melissa McCatty, the lady you may have seen on that video on X, saying that she has no plans to take her own life, a video that she put out because she fears for her life. For what she's been revealing about Pfizer. Well, she got in touch and something's come up, so she's had to reschedule, but she is going to come on the show. And I am really looking forward to speaking with her so that she can dish all of the dirt on that awful, evil pharmaceutical company, Pfizer. But my second guest will be joining us in the final part of today's show. I'll be welcoming Catherine Engelbrecht to the Freeman Report for the first time. Catherine recently appeared on Tucker Carlson's show to talk about an issue that Americans are starting to wake up to, which is the planned entry of millions of illegal migrants into the US so that future elections can be rigged. My first guest, I forgot to mention him, who's kindly offered to step in to replace Melissa, is, I've got a name block now, it is Ben Walker. That's right. He's the chairman of UKIP. And of course, we've got that election, the UKIP election for the leader. So we'll be talking about that, and we'll be talking about other developments in UK politics at the moment. But what a week it has been. Social media is once again on fire with stories about what our governments and the media did to us during the COVID period. Videos of TV doctors telling the public that the jabs are 100% safe, and ministers echoing those messages whilst coercing the public to get jabbed. We've also seen documents showing that one certain TV doctor who was saying the jabs were 100% safe on TV, is actually on the payroll of AstraZeneca. He says that was for an entirely different project related to a separate flu education campaign. And maybe that's true. I don't think we will ever know. But it's astonishing that he appeared on TV spouting disinformation in the first place, as there was never any evidence to back out those claims. In fact, there was a lot of evidence of harms early on and the fact that the jab didn't stop transmission. So the fact that he spread this disinformation on TV to the British public and that he was on the payroll of AstraZeneca is a shocking revelation, even if he says the two things are not linked. And let's be honest, ladies and gentlemen, given the fact that he is guilty of purposely spreading disinformation, why should we believe him now when he says the two things aren't linked? That's my view on that story. My first guest, I am going to talk a little bit about her because she will be, we're going to reschedule and get her on next week. Melissa McCatty. She is a former employee of Pfizer, the big pharma company. She is now a whistleblower. And like I said, she has put that video out saying that she doesn't intend to take her own life. And my view is that she should be worried, as very recently we've learned how two Boeing whistleblowers have mysteriously died. The first death is what the legacy press is saying was a self-inflicted gun wound, and the second death occurred after a short illness. It's clear to me that there is an evil in this world that has been there for a very long time, but more and more it seems that that evil is coming into the light. In the past day, we've learned that Pfizer is finally settling a case against it, brought by 10,000 people who've gone on to get cancer after using Zantac, a heartburn drug. My only hope in all of this activity on social media at the moment, in the press, is that the public are watching all of this and taking it in. Because I think next time, if they try and do that again, they try and coerce and force us to take experimental drugs. Well, if we all just turn around and say, no, thank you very much, then the whole thing will just go away. That is what my hope is, because clearly I don't think we're ever going to see any accountability or justice from our governments and legal system. If you want to get in touch, then please email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And if you want to join in the conversation, get yourself over to tntradio.live and click on the chat icon. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk TNT.
The latest headlines waiting for you.
I follow the news pretty much throughout the day.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, okay, for some breaking news, we're going to go straight over to our fabulous political editor, Basil Valentine. Hello, Basil.
Good afternoon, James. Great to be with you, and hello again to all our viewers and listeners all around the world. I like all the adjectives, fabulous, esteemed, I must admit, my celebrity status is growing by the day. But unfortunately, I've got a report once again on dark times. It is our solemn duty. The United Nations Relief and Works Agency in East Jerusalem, which seeks to look after Palestinian refugees, has closed its headquarters after weeks of attacks by Israeli extremists. This evening, Israeli residents set fire twice to the perimeter of the headquarters in East Jerusalem, according to Philip Lazzarini, head of the agency, lamenting it being the second attack on the compound within days. Staff from the United Nations Relief and Works Agency and other universities were at the compound, which has petrol and diesel stations for a fleet of UN cars, and they say that their staff are under threat of death. So in addition to what's going on in Gaza, violent attacks on aid agencies in Jerusalem itself. Meanwhile, Israeli whistleblowers working at these Sadeh Taiman desert camp, a holding site for Palestinians detained during the invasion of Gaza, have claimed to witness a series of abuses by military, including prisoners being restrained, blindfolded, and forced to wear diapers. The Israeli whistleblowers said of the prisoners, "We were told they were not allowed to move. They should sit upright. They're not allowed to talk, not allowed to peek under their blindfold." According to the sources, guards were instructed to enforce silence by shouting "Uskot," Arabic for shut up, and to identify and punish problematic individuals. None of these people, of course, have been tried for anything, let alone convicted, simply being guilty of the crime of being Palestinian in Gaza.
And Basil, what is the latest from Rafah now? We know that the US ordered tens of thousands, Israel, well, it might as well be, I guess, but Israel ordered tens of thousands of civilians to leave certain areas of Rafah. We know that bombing campaigns have started. What's the latest from there?
About 110,000 people, according to the United Nations, have now left Rafah. No aid has been allowed in since Sunday, since the Israeli military took control of the Gaza side of the Rafah crossing into Egypt. All crossings into southern Gaza remain closed, cutting off supplies and preventing medical evacuations and the movement of humanitarian staff. An official for the UN's Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs working there said that some of the individuals are too starving to move. So the major sort of tank-led artillery barrage has yet to start, but airstrikes continue, and it's the very tensest moment, to put it that way, that imaginable.
Yeah, and what about Egypt? Because Egypt's been very, very quiet throughout all of this, hasn't it? And, you know, it obviously hasn't opened its border crossings. There's, I guess, several reasons maybe why that is, because maybe it doesn't want to import this war into its own country. But it has been incredibly quiet. In fact, the last time I think I read anything in the press, anything coming out of Egypt, was actually at the start of this campaign, when one of its diplomats came out and said that they, the country had warned Israel that the attack was going to happen. They'd literally warned them in the days leading up to it.
They may well have done so. And there were reports early on as well that what originally had been planned was a much wider conflagration involving Hezbollah, Egypt, Syria, and other Arab states, and that in the end Hamas were left on their own. I don't know if that's true or not. What we do know is that Egypt is a client state of the United States. It's heavily dependent on the US for aid. So if the Americans say, look, if you do anything meaningful to support the Palestinians, we're going to cut the money off, then nothing happens. It's an authoritarian regime under President Sisi. And while the average Egyptian on the street may be fully supportive of the Palestinian cause, there's not much they can do about it under a bribed military government as they are.
And Basil, just to get your opinion on this, how long do you think that the Israel can carry on with this bombing of Rafah and maybe even escalate this? Because it's clear that around the world now, I think, you know, populations around the world, they're definitely becoming more vocal. In the US, in the UK, we're hearing more and more people. How long can the US and the UK and other Western nations carry on this against the wishes of a large proportion of their populations?
Well, I was naive enough to think that the West might have had enough and called a halt and cut off the military supplies after a month or two. And here we are, 7 months, heading to 8 months in, and no signs of it stopping yet. Joe Biden has threatened to withhold delivery of some huge bombs that cause enormous amounts of indiscriminate damage. But the Israelis say they've got enough munitions to carry out whatever they want to do in Rafah with or without the latest delivery. And Netanyahu has vowed that Israel will stand alone and fight with our fingernails, he said, in defiance of American threats to restrict arms deliveries. So who knows? You know, they've said they want to see the total elimination of Hamas, right down to the last fighter, the T-boy and the T-boy's son, it seems. It's an exterminationist policy, very rarely seen in modern so-called warfare. The Russians are not seeking to exterminate every single member of the Ukrainian army and vice versa. But the Israelis seem determined to exterminate every single member of Hamas. That may not be physically possible, but they're not going to stop until they've tried very hard, regardless of how many civilians are killed in the process.
Yeah, and just finally, Basil, I'd like to get your view on this announcement from the Biden administration that it has paused that shipment of those bombs. I mean, to me, this seems like a big bag of propaganda, because, you know, it's kind of on, I guess, saying to the public, look, we're trying to do something here. We're trying to bring Israel and rein them back in. But Israel's taken no notice. It's clear that it doesn't actually matter in the big scheme of things. Do you think this is a genuine announcement by the US government and potentially they'll escalate, or do you just think this is smoke and mirrors?
I think it's a desperate attempt by Joe Biden to shore up some of the support base that he took for granted at the last election, but that is melting away in the face of his support for the genocide. Let's just have a look at what this shipment that is apparently being paused consists of. 1,800 2,000-pound bombs. So that's nearly 2,000 huge bombs. There are only a few buildings left standing in Gaza. Why are 1,800 bombs needed to drop on a tiny enclave with 1.6 million people sheltering in it? Oh, 1,800 2,000-pound bombs. plus 1,700 500-pound bombs. So, you know, we're really talking about obscene amounts of munitions to begin with. Biden's now losing, of course, the support of his hardcore Zionist donors as well, because they think even this tiny little pathetic attempt at reining back the onslaught is out of the question. It's caving into Hamas.
Yeah. And of course, as you know, as well as these being huge, great bombs, this is a huge, great profit machine for a lot of American companies, yes, which the US population is footing the bill for. Basil, thank you as always for that breaking news there. I hope you have a great weekend, and you must come back on the Friedman Report again soon.
I will do that next week. Thank you, James.
Thank you, Basil. Right. Okay. We're going to take a short break now. And as I said, Melissa is rescheduling. So hopefully we'll get her on early next week. But Ben Walker, the chairman of UKIP, has kindly offered to step in. So we're going to be talking about that UKIP election, and we'll be talking about a number of stories in the UK press on the politics in the UK. So don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are, right here with me, James Friedman, on today's News Talk.
TNT's Lembit Opic.
Frankly, it's been irritating me all morning. The state-sponsored British television station has been spending airtime talking about a vegan croissant in France. Now, the story is, you've guessed it, tied into climate change. Oh yes, apparently this croissant is going to save the world by doing away with butter, which is of course a milk and therefore animal-based product. They're literally covering this in their bulletins again and again and again. Why? Because, as we know, this state-sponsored channel is obsessed with the idea that the human race is ruining the climate. Whether you believe that or not, let me be honest, I don't think a croissant, which is made to vegan specifications, is going to save us.
Lembit Opic. And today's News Talk, TNT. On air 24/7, this is today's News Talk, TNT.
Right. Okay. So my first guest this hour is Ben Walker. He is the chairman of the UK Independence Party, aka UKIP. Welcome back to the Friedman Report, Ben.
Hey, James. How are you doing?
Like I said in the break there, I've had to take my jacket off because it's quite hot. I'm not complaining. As you said, you know, we can't complain, can we? Because we've been complaining for months about all of the rain and the cold. But anyway... If people are wondering why I'm dressed differently now, that's why, because it's bleeding hot in here. Ben, how is the... obviously, we've got the election results coming out for the leadership contest on Monday. How would you say... I mean, obviously, you can't give us an indication on, you know, who's going to win and whatever, but how has the election gone overall? Has it been a success for UKIP?
Yeah, I think so. It was a little bit of new territory for us, really, because we opened this up so you could literally apply if you weren't a member and become a member as part of your application. So that was a new thing for us. And I think, you know, we've ended up with, well, we had three candidates. We now got two because one pulled out. But they're very good, credible candidates. And I think that they're both people that can offer a different skill set. For us as a party, I guess, if you like, in driving forward with what's undoubtedly going to be a change in messaging and look. But hey, I'm ready for the challenge, and we'll see what's in store. But I think, you know, there is definitely the opportunity for a party like us, and it really frustrates me. I mean, even today, you've got Dominic Cummings saying, "Oh, I'm going to start a new party to, you know." Compete with the Conservatives. It's like, come on, guys. Like, how many more parties do we need? And actually, it's my belief that you're doing a disservice to the electorate, because what people really want is a party which isn't about egos. It's based or is built from a grassroots movement. You know, it has local branches. It has a footprint right across the country with local people representing its policies and its views. And I just think if you're going to start... you know, starting out all of these new centrist parties, if you like, which are run from the middle, which aren't democratic. Members or subscribers don't really have any interaction or way of changing the leadership, for argument's sake, which is currently what we're doing. I just don't think that's a good place to be. And that, you know, we need to convalesce and we need to come together on our side, because quite frankly, I mean, British politics is absolutely in the bin and it's falling apart. And there has to be a credible alternative.
It is shocking. Absolutely shocking. I mean, I think the only reason that I think people are not jumping up and down more is because there is just so many shocking things going on in the world at the moment. It's just like, I don't know, I think the new norm is a more extreme world with different things, you know, the people aren't shocked anymore. But Ben, how is the membership of UKIP? Has it been growing? Have you seen more members coming in during the election?
So, yes, there has been a slight uptake. There was a cutoff, and forgive me, I don't remember the date, but you had to be a member by a certain time to be able to take part in the leadership election. So obviously that affected new members joining for the purposes of the leadership election. But yeah, there's a steady creep up. I mean, I make no bones about it. UKIP's had its difficulties. I will always be honest about that. For various different reasons, and that has impacted the membership as we've gone along. The formation of other parties also impacts the membership, which I'm sure you can probably have a guess about who I'm talking about. But the membership is going up, which is a great place to be. The only problem that I would say, and this isn't just a UKIP problem, but if you look at the type of member that the party is attractive to, these are people of advanced age a lot of the time, and that is a problem. So where we're talking about, you know, people are just generally fed up. I mean, you're absolutely right. I have never seen levels of apathy and disaffection in politics as we do today. I mean, it's astounding how bad it is and just how removed people feel from the democratic process, if you like. And I feel that something's got to be done on that front, and we've got to start appealing to the younger generation and all of those people that feel like politics doesn't represent them, because that majority could literally change the picture just like that if they all engaged, and it's getting them to engage. So hopefully a new leader for us can help with that.
Yeah, because there's one really strong thing about UKIP. I mean, you're right, it has had its problems, and you know, there's no point in denying that. But it is a proper political party, isn't it? It has national branches. If you join to be a member, you have a say in the party. You get to vote on the leadership and other things. You know, you can be part of your national, your local branch and get involved. Very, very different, isn't it, to Reform UK, which essentially is a limited company.
That's right. And I think that's one of, if not the biggest difference between us and Reform. And OK, UKIP's had its problems, as we've both alluded to. But the truth is, we may have had a problem with messaging. So once we won the referendum result and we got Brexit in name only, but we got it, there were some problems. Like, what was UKIP's purpose? And then we had some failed leaders. We never really got to grips with that. But for the last few years, we absolutely have. I mean, our manifesto is probably one of the best out there. Yeah. And it's one of the most in-depth ones that you'll see. The trouble is, because it's UKIP, people go, oh, no, you know, they're done or whatever. But yes, I think we've got the messaging right. But, you know, we're talking about Reform. The problem with Reform is exactly that. There is no real interaction between its membership and its leadership. None.
Well, they don't have a say. They don't have members. That's the thing, isn't it? You can't, even as a candidate. When I left Reform, because I just had enough, and this was one of the reasons why I left, because I could see that they're never ever going to get anyone elected because they haven't got that membership and they haven't got that engagement from they haven't got any troops on the ground. Because that's what wins election. It's in local infrastructure. It's people coming out with candidates. They just haven't got that because people, why would you do that? You've got no stake in the game.
Absolutely. I mean, you have any success in any type of election in this country, be it parish, town, district, unitary, whatever it is, right up to parliamentary, it has to be underpinned by local activism. And that's something that UKIP's had its problems with in recent years, because obviously where you're struggling for numbers in whatever area, then you can't actually achieve that. So you could criticise us as well, because in some respects we've had to centralise things to make things happen. And that isn't the best way to do politics. But reform are absolutely like that. And the problem also with reform is I don't believe they truly understand what they are and what they're here to achieve. And I think for as long as that's the problem at their core, they're never going to achieve anything, because what are they wanting to do? It's okay producing some you know, flashy graphics and memes and all of that sort of stuff, but you really need some hard political, substantial thinking behind your ideas and how you're going to move forward and what it is you actually want to achieve. I don't believe they've got that.
They haven't. And the other thing which I've, you know, Rick Munn, and Locked and Loaded, one thing that he talks about, he's had several reform. I don't think they put their candidates on my show anymore because I'm very, very critical of them. But, you know, one thing, one of the criticisms Rick has come out is that their leader is actually at odds with most of the candidates on things like, or he was on the vaccines, on, you know, Ukraine, the proxy war in Ukraine. So there doesn't seem to be a cohesion between the candidates and the actual leader. That is the other problem. Right now, Ben, we're going to take a short break now for the headlines. When we come back, let's talk about some stories in the UK about politics and stuff going on here in Blighty. So we'll be back with you in just in a second, right here on TNT.
Hear about it.
We're depending on our congressman.
Talk about it.
The people have to stand up and say enough.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with your TNT headlines. Donald Trump's fired a volley of shots at independent presidential candidate RFK Jr., branding him as a fake and a radical left lunatic. A new study out of Germany has found the US's global approval rating has plummeted across the Middle East and in Europe over the past year, while China and Russia have improved their standing in the world. And Hunter Biden is set to stand trial on gun charges next month after a federal court rejected his appeal.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk. TNT Radio. TNT Radio.
Ben, given all of the problems that we've got in a lot of our established institutions in the UK, whether it's the NHS, whether it's local government, I mean, it's an obvious question I'm going to ask you, but we can break it down a little bit. Do you think it's right that we're still seeing these job adverts paying, you know, for jobs paying up to £120,000 in some cases, jobs being advertised in the NHS, in Westminster, in the Treasury, for diversity managers?
No, I mean, my personal view on this is that the sooner that we lance this boil, the better, because it is essentially a cancer. I mean, looking at my own NHS, well, in fact, it's not because I moved, but the one that I used to be a member of, they were advertising for an artwork coordinator, corridor coordinator. So someone who obviously gets all the artwork, puts it down the walkways of the hospital. That was £66,000 a year. Now, if that were me, I could just go to a local school and ask them for some pictures or something like that. You do not need to spend that amount of money on what is essentially a complete and utter non-job. But we are riddled with these things throughout our establishment. And it's not business per se, although, forgive me, it probably is the big companies, but real business, they don't do this nonsense because it doesn't pay the bills. But yeah, the establishment, they get away with this. I mean, I can't remember the figures, but I saw a story the other day where there was a treasury position for, you know, in the British Treasury, was getting less than a diversity coordinator in an NHS trust. And you think, well, this is somebody who is obviously carries some responsibility over the economy, yet they're getting paid less than someone working for an NHS trust who concentrates on diversity. So what's important to us in moving forward? Because I think I know what the answer is.
Yeah, it is shocking that we're seeing, and I've seen stories today in Westminster and some shocking salaries being offered as well. Another story that I've been talking about on the Freeman Report over the past couple of weeks since those local elections is, and it's particularly about the local elections because Westminster has a remit for foreign policy. So it's slightly different, although you can still argue the case. But how much of a problem do you think it is when we have religious voting blocks in a secular country, particularly for like local elections? We've seen people celebrating becoming councillors, which is all about delivering local services, by saying it's a win for the Palestinian people.
Yeah, I mean, this is outrageous. And this is people that are just politicising that role. And it's, you know, local councils. And I've been a local councillor for a long time. I stood down and I didn't stand again for this election. But they carry out an important part of local democracy and accountability. And the truth is, they have, in some respects, more power than you think, because they actually have budgets that they can affect and change local people's lives in certain ways. But I don't want to see anything from my local representation other than what are you doing about pavements, roads, dog poo bins, you know, local youth services, all of those things. That's what I want to hear. I actually don't even want to hear about party politics at a local level.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. What do you think we can do, though? Because we've got this problem, haven't we? And obviously the conflict in Gaza has kind of accentuated this. But we are in danger of getting these religious voting blocks from essentially a minority of the UK population. I think the Muslim population make up around 5-6% of the UK population. But of course, you know, once you concentrate that vote into a block, it is a threat in a secular society, isn't it? How do you think we go about defending our democracy from that?
Yeah, wow. I mean, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Because that's nothing that's going to be fixed by local councils either. This is a much bigger problem where the fabric and the politics and the polarisation of our society is changing at a rate of knots that we simply cannot keep up with. And it's all, it rests solely on the shoulders of our successive failed governments who have allowed a multitude of things to change and affect our population here, but it's not going to be fixed overnight. And you know, you mentioned it about, you know, the religious stuff, and you've got to look at the Green Party now in this country. They've got to be the most extreme political party that we have got. They are harbouring absolute fanatics and nutters. And yet, Ben, you know,
sorry to interrupt you there, Ben. What's your policy, what's UKIP's policy on proportional representation and the voting system? Because that is one way, I guess, we could get around that and maybe add some protection, even if it's just at a local level that we introduce PR. What's UKIP's policy on that?
Well, the party has for a long time supported proportional representation. Exactly how that looks, I'm not sure. I mean, there's so many variants and how it works. Yeah. So in the round, yes, the party supports it. Me personally, I would say that having looked at some numbers and some research on that specifically for the UK parties, I'm not even sure it would help the smaller parties in the end. And we would end up with more Green and Liberal Democrat representation, which I don't think anybody really wants. But there is a big question mark around it. But the party essentially supports it because at the moment our system is quite frankly broken.
Yeah, it is broken. Absolutely. We'll leave it there. Ben Walker, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much, Ben. And where can people go on Monday to find out the results of that leadership election?
So it will be announced towards the end of the day, I imagine, on the website and across our social media platforms. So ukip.org and you'll find everything.
Fantastic. Thank you, Ben. Have a great weekend. Thank you.
Thanks, James. You too, mate.
Right. We're going to take a short break now, and then we're going to go to my final guest of the day. She is Catherine Engelbrecht. She's the founder of True Vote. She's recently been on Tucker Carlson talking about now a problem that we've been aware of for a long time. I've had lots of guests from the US talking about it, the fact that it is the planned migration, lots of illegal migrants being purposely brought into the US to distort future elections. Well, now it seems the public is starting to sit up and listen, and it does seem there's moves to stop illegals being able to vote. So we're going to be talking all about that in the final segment of the show right here in a moment on TNT.
I said, could she die? And the doctor said she could. It was so scary.
When I started clawing at my neck and trying to breathe, and I thought, you know, what are we going to do if I die here? How's everyone going to go on?
When someone's gravely sick or injured in the bush, they rely on the Royal Flying Doctor Service. But now the Flying Doctor needs your help to fund vital medical equipment and supplies. Please search Flying Doctor online to give a regular gift of just $10. You can help equip the Flying Doctor's teams to respond to any emergency anywhere. Search Flying Doctor online. Become a part of the Royal Flying Doctor Service and help save lives in the bush.
She used to dance and dream of a better life, a brighter future, with nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn, to get an education, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, she dances for the world. Together, we give children in poverty a chance to set their sights high and achieve their dreams by ensuring that they have access to health care, education, life skills, and more, so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves.
Gracias. Gracias.
Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today.
Around here, bushfire is just a part of life. We've been through it before, and we'll get through it again. The people here all look out for each other. We're a community that does its bit to plan and prepare, to keep everyone safe. We live with bushfire, so we live bushfire ready.
The conversation continues with James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Right. Okay. My next guest hasn't quite arrived yet. We're doing our best to get her on. She is Catherine Engelbrecht, and she is the founder of True Vote. We're going to get her on the telephone, I think, because there's a few technical issues, internet issues. So while we wait for that, I'm going to talk about once again, the biggest story for me this week is actually something that I broke on the Freeman Report yesterday. Eden Bieber came on. He's an investigative journalist from Russia. And I'm not quite sure that he even comprehended the significance of the story that he had brought to me. But of course, you know, we've heard about AstraZeneca. Yes, we know that it's admitted that its COVID jab potentially causes a rare side effect, thrombosis and thrombocytopenia. So that was kind of the story. And then, of course, this week it's withdrawn its product from the market at its own request. So everybody has gone mental on X, on social media platforms, talking all about this. It's brought up all of the memories of what happened 4 years ago. But I think a lot of people have missed actually this story, because it seems, I think it's pretty clear now, that AstraZeneca requested that its license be removed, not because of commercial reasons, which is what the British government are saying. Penny Mordaunt stood up in Parliament and said as much to Andrew Bridgen and called him a conspiracy theorist for thinking anything other than that. But it appears that there's a long-term clinical trials, the results of which were submitted before Christmas. And they're pretty damning about the AstraZeneca COVID jab. And lo and behold, if the COVID jab is no longer a licensed drug in the UK, the regulator doesn't have to scrutinise it. So this is a clear attempt, I think, by AstraZeneca to make the whole thing go away so that the public never, ever sees that clinical trial data. Right. OK, I'm delighted to announce, I think my guest has arrived. Hello, Catherine. Are you there?
I am. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for coming on the Freeman Report. Obviously, it's your first time on the show. You are the founder of True Vote. I guess that's a good place to start. Tell us about what True Vote is, and why you founded it, I guess.
Sure. Well, True the Vote was frankly started quite by accident back in 2009. I wasn't intending to start an election integrity organization, but a group of us went to go work at the polls. And we saw very specific process problems that we thought, okay, if this is what happens when people are watching, what happens when nobody is there? What can we do to improve the workflow? And so we began to deconstruct the process locally in Harris County, which is the Houston area in Texas. And one thing led to the next, and the problems that we continued to unpack got bigger and bigger and bigger. And so we began to get some notice by the press, and one thing leads to the next, and it became a national movement. And now I will say that I look back on everything that we have been through, and I believe that it is all about what's coming in these next few months in 2024.
Now, I've had lots of guests on from the US who talk about this, all these illegals coming in. And the fact Michael Yon, for example, came on and he's gathered lots of evidence that is actually planned, that it's being done on purpose. And there's a lot of people saying that it's being done. Well, I mean, there's probably lots of reasons why it's being done to cause chaos. But one of the reasons is also to affect the outcome of future elections. What's your position on that, Catherine?
Well, I think Michael's right. I think that you'd have to be... you'd have to really have a lot of fog in your eyes at this point to not see what's happening in this country relative to the breakdown at the borders and people flooding across. I think that the one area that maybe I tend to differ is that I don't believe it's necessarily for future elections in as much as, you know, elections that are years away. I think this is being done for November. And I believe that there is precedent in our history that shows how citizenship can be given, and that's done quite easily, frankly, through an executive order. And I have no reason to believe that it won't be executed prior to November's election. With everything that is on the line for this election and knowing what this administration has done to the country already, why wouldn't they go the distance and fire off an executive order that would give voting rights to non-citizens? And again, as I say, it's been done in the past. Why wouldn't it be done this time? So I'm hopeful that I'm wrong, but I believe that it's a possibility.
I think it is a distinct possibility because, I've had guests on talking about how the language has changed in certain states so that people that have come across the border illegally. We actually heard about a child, I think, that was excluded from school for calling them illegals because the language is being changed so that they become undocumented citizens. So I think it's clear what the intention is. I mean, Catherine, what do you think will happen if we do see this unfold in this year's election? We see Biden get back in, and it's clear that millions and millions of illegals have been allowed to vote. What do you think the American public are going to do about that?
You know, that's the big question, isn't it? I think we will have at that point crossed a line in the sand. And I shudder to think what that might really look like. But at some point, Americans are going to have to say enough is enough. And escalate our disapproval. I don't know. I mean, I don't. Yeah. I don't know. It's so unfathomable on so many levels to believe that it could happen. But after everything that we have been through in this country and that the world has been through in these last few years, removing common freedoms and liberties that we've all known and enjoyed for years. And now we're in such a different place as a culture and as a society now versus 2020. I really think that I just don't know. Yeah. I think it could escalate into violence. I pray that that's not the case, but they're leaving very little option.
Yeah, I mean that's why I'm asking the question, because I think, you know, America has been polarized for years now, but it is really a problem at the moment. I mean, the other thing to mention here, Catherine, is I think the majority of, it looks like the voters in the US are going to get a choice of Trump and Biden, unless the Democrats change their candidate in August at their convention. It looks like we're going to get these two. But it's incredible, isn't it? Because I think a lot of the polls show that most Americans don't want either of them.
It's, you know, we've reached a point, sadly, where running for office, which when I was young, I mean, you thought about running, you know, how I want to be the president of the United States as being the loftiest of ambitions and something that would be carried with honor and respect. And I do believe that President Trump carries it with the respect for the American people. But we have taken the office. And anybody that runs, be prepared to have your life publicly filleted and destroyed along the way. And what's being done right now to President Trump is unconscionable. I know the kinds of attacks that we take on a very routine basis, and it's a lot, and it adds up over the years. And when I look at what President Trump's being put through, even now, where he's basically having to campaign from a courtroom because his enemies have so strategized in such a way as to you know keep him at bay through these nonsense court filings. It just is beneath the dignity of any office. And so yeah, I think that people are just sick of it. They're sick of all of it. What we really need is a clean slate and people who don't want to be politicians, but they are concerned about their families and their businesses to come and stand up and serve for a limited period of time and then leave office and go back to a normal life and let other people come in. That's how it used to be back in the day. But now, because it is a, you know, multi-billion dollar money printing machine, people with lower intentions are occupying those offices. We're reaching a breaking point. And I mean, if we're not at it, we're close. And something's going to have to give because the dysfunction can't stand forever.
Yeah, and we've talked about, obviously, we've alluded towards the fact that you know, whether we could see civil unrest if our worst fears materialize at this year's election and Americans don't accept the election or half the population doesn't. But what about the states? Because Texas, for years now, there's been rumors that Texas may succeed one day. I think I've had talked to Del Bigtree about this from the High Wire. The fact that Texas has kept all of his infrastructure within the borders of Texas. So in its essence, it could secede if it wanted. Do you think that's a possibility as well, that we'll see the breakup of the United States?
It's really, in 99% of my mind, that's inconceivable. However, if pushed beyond, people will do what is necessary to protect their families. And at the end of the day, Texans will stand in defense of their state and their loved ones. So even in having this discussion, it's surreal. It's surreal that we are really having serious conversations, because it's truly where we are as a country. These are very, very troubling times. But I do have a great faith in the American people. And I believe that the only good thing that came out of 2020 was Americans woke up. And so as long as we stay vigilant, it's going to be a rough ride. But I think that good things can come from this.
And that executive order that we alluded to, which the president could, I think it'd be mad to do it, to be honest with you, before the election, where he could allow undocumented citizens, in other words, illegals, to vote. What is the makeup in terms of states? Obviously, Democratic states are going to support that, I assume. But how much of a pushback do you think there will be from states on a legal basis to that executive order? Is there anything they could do about it?
There would be immediate pushback. I mean, the most recent example of an executive order granting citizenship rights, and to be specific, I think that if it were to happen, the executive order would be styled in such a way as to grant amnesty and citizenship. And of course, with that then just comes the voting rights part and parcel. Mm. But I believe that when you look back, I mean, this is most recently done during the Obama administration, when for years, President Obama said that he could not pass amnesty and citizenship or extend amnesty and citizenship to the children of immigrants, which we call dreamers, if you're familiar with that term. And that played out back and forth in Congress, much like what's been played out back and forth in our Congress about the larger, broader issue of immigration now, because you have the entire Senate Democrat side pushing for immediate immigration. In fact, Dick Durbin wrote a letter at the end of March of this year to President Biden, which I think is part of laying the predicate for what could come. But during the Obama administration, the passage of what became known as DACA was passed by or was executed under executive order, and it was taken to court, but the court upheld the executive order. So we know that it's possible. It's been tested, and it's been tested at scale. So it's low hanging fruit, frankly, for you know, someone that would see it as such. I do believe that the states would push back, but if you think about the timing, if they were to do something like this, let's just say October, okay, it would certainly be held, you know, or even later, late October, who knows? I mean, if you're going to go for it, why not just go for it? Why not do it? You know, you need enough time to mobilize those new voters, or not even necessarily new voters, but just know how to work those new registrations that have been being collected by NGOs for all of these years. And so, you know, you need enough time to execute on that strategy. But past that, yes, I believe that Republican states would fire off legal challenges, but how long will that take? And in the interim, the confusion and the chaos that will be caused will be sufficient to achieve the goals, which is pandemonium at the polls. You know, engineered chaos.
Let's hope
chaos.
That doesn't happen, because I you know, I could see there being civil unrest in America. I think it'd be
absolutely
extremely damaging. You know, I think Americans have lost confidence, or a lot of Americans have lost constant confidence in the election process already. I think that would just undermine it even further. Now, talking about that national convention in August, the Democratic one, I do ask all of my US or most of my US guests whether they think, and it's probably at a ratio of about 2 to 10 at the moment, two in favor of thinking that the Democrats will change Biden just because he's not capable of running an election. It's clear that he cannot perform, cannot give a speech. So, you know, it's just shocking that the Democrats would put him up against 10 who say, no, he's going to be the candidate. What are your thoughts, Catherine?
You know, the later in the year it grows, there was a time a few months ago that I really did think that they were maneuvering to give a sufficient, you know, display a sufficient mental lack of acuity such to remove him, you know, months ago. The fact that we are at the point that we are, I think that I would probably be in the camp that it's going to be Biden as the candidate. But what that tells us is, and you're exactly right, Biden's not running this, but whoever's pulling the strings has sufficient string pulling power as to continue this facade, and they have enough money they can pour in to create the illusion of exactly what they need for the photo ops in which they need it, because that's all they need him for. He's not running anything. And I think that he's going to be the nominee. It's unbelievable on so many levels, but I think that's where we're heading.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. It really is. Sat for all of us around the world watching all of this unfold in America. My best wishes do go to America. I hope things go well this year at the elections. And Trump, I think, you know, love him or hate him, I think Trump, you can't get much worse than Biden. So let's just hope Trump does get in. Catherine Engelbrecht, ladies and gentlemen, Catherine, we'll have to get you on video next time. But listen, thank you for joining me on the Freeman Report. And I hope you have a great weekend.
Sure thing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Right, that's it, folks. I'm going to get a gin and tonic. I'll see you all again on Monday right here on TNT.